Coming up on New York Now, tensions rise as the Senate becomes deadlocked.
They're pulling a, you know, this is a charade. They should be embarrassed by their actions.
Thank you.
Dan Clark of PolitiFact New York and Dave Lombardo of the Times Union join us for analysis.
There's, you know, the 31-31 tie at this point. Senate Democrats, you know, drew a line in the sand this week saying, we want votes on our bills. We believe that the chamber needs to operate in a more bipartisan fashion.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. It's June, and the state Senate appears to be in gridlock. Oh, it makes me feel young again.
That's first up in our look at headlines. Gridlock in the state Senate returned this week. A refresher first. The Republicans hold a slight 32-31 advantage in the chamber, but Suffolk County member Tom Croce, who is not seeking re-election, has returned to his job with the U.S. Navy, leaving each conference with the same number of members. This week, Senate Democrats tried to attach hostile amendments to legislation, including the Reproductive Health Act, but to no avail. On Thursday, for the first time since the failure to pass the DREAM Act in 2014, a bill that would extend laws relating to concussions at public schools to non-public schools was defeated, as all 30 Democrats present voted against it.
This is what people hate around the state about what goes on in politics. It's sickening. It truly is. That we would put politics, some would put politics above health. Some would put politics above safety. That people would look at an issue like this, we're dealing with brain injury. Brain injuries to young people in our state. And they would say, we have an opportunity here politically because of the numbers. So we can game this. We can make a mockery of justice.
I have been in this chamber about 8 years now. And this is the first time in 8 years I have had a bill presented to me with absolutely no notice, not knowing what it is, what's in it, or that it's coming to the floor. So if my colleagues want to talk about what's disgraceful, let's talk about the fact that they are concerned they don't have the votes to pass a single thing in this chamber, and their answer to that is to jam us with things that we have no idea, we haven't had a chance to read, talk about, discuss as a conference, or deliberate as a democratic body would be, and I mean democratic with a small d. So Senator Lanz is correct. Let's stop the shenanigans. Let's stop the politics.
Senate Majority Leader John Flanagan expressed his anger and frustration afterward.
What just happened in there?
You saw democracy in action. And you saw the Democrats playing shameless games with people's lives, children's lives. Senator Ranzenhofer offered a really substantive, important bill that would protect children from harm and injury, and the Democrats have decided they don't want to govern. They want to have politics rule the day. It's embarrassing, it's disgusting, and I hope the public understands. They voted down a bill that was aimed to protect children all across the state of New York. I don't know how much more evident it gets in there.
Do you feel like anything can get done for the rest of the year at this point?
Absolutely. We know how to act like adults. We've demonstrated that. They need to stand up and actually demonstrate that they think they want to govern, but we have a lot of things that we need to get done, but if this is how they're going to conduct business, That's their problem. It's their fault. That's not the way we do business.
Can you clarify what Tom Croce's status is right now? Will he be back before the end of session?
That remains an open question. That's a topic of discussion for Senator Croce and the federal government.
Was there a concern that the lieutenant governor was here, that there would be an attempt for her to take the podium somehow or other, take the control of the session and at minimum have some sort of vote on the germaneness of hostile amendments that the Democrats were poised to offer?
Well, let's keep a couple of things in mind. First of all, the lieutenant governor has a right to go up and take the vote. Second of all, the lieutenant governor has no right whatsoever to vote on anything by law, by statute, by constitution. So her being here, she certainly has a right to do that, but she was here yesterday and she was here today. There was no need for her to go up there because we were demonstrating again that we know how to run chamber.
Thank you.
Were you concerned that they were going to try to attempt to end run the rules to get a discussion about those?
No, we have rules for a reason, and we adhere to them, whether it's through the committees or in the chamber. We're going to keep offering bills that are substantive. We're going to offer local bills that are important to local communities and the people we represent. They're pulling a, you know, this is a charade. They should be embarrassed by their actions.
Thank you.
Senate Democratic Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins responded a few minutes later.
What happened today is something that's been unprecedented. We have no active list, and we believe that it is simply because there is an unwillingness to take up important issues, issues that we are trying to bring forward that will benefit the women of New York, contraceptive care, reproductive health. It was the issue yesterday. And I believe my colleagues across the aisle are so concerned about having to vote for this issue that they'd rather not do normal things so that they do not have to take up the things that are important to New Yorkers. We will continue to be here. We will continue to bring up the issues that we know New Yorkers care about. And I'm hoping that my colleagues across the aisle will look at the big picture.
It seems like you're kind of going on strike. Are you going to vote no on everything until the bills that you want come?
No. We have a process. And again, we've been able to follow normal procedures in our body, which allows us to bring forward bills, whether or not the other side agrees or not. There are ways to do this. That's all we're trying to do. There are absolute ways that are prescribed that we do these things, and they for whatever the reason, and basically, from what I gather, because they don't want to do women's health, because they just don't want to broach this issue, they want to throw normal ways that we do things out the window.
With a current tie in the number of conference members and the uncertainty on whether Senator Croce will return, there was speculation this week on whether the session might not go all the way to June 20th, the last scheduled day for lawmakers. That was the question reporters asked Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie after a story by Ken Lovett of the Daily News said Senate Republicans may be looking to wrap up a week early. Hastie answered this question and more with reporters on Wednesday.
I know the Senate has challenges now where, any bills that get passed are going to have to actually have bipartisan support. But we are here to work. We're scheduled to work through June 20th. So I'd say unless something miraculous happens, I think we'll I'll speak to Senator Flanagan again, but I think right now our inclination is to stay here.
Mr. Speaker, there's a report that could be coming out in the next couple of weeks from the Department of Health about recreational marijuana, its impact on New York. Just wondering, where do you think your conference would ultimately stand on this? Have they discussed that at all? And would the legislature have to act, not this year necessarily, but maybe even next year on that?
We've had some general discussions about the subject, and as I've said previously, I think the public's opinion is evolving on marijuana. But as I've said also as well, we have to look at it from the criminal justice aspect as well. You'll have a lot of people who have arrest records, criminal records because of marijuana use. So if we get to that point, it's not just about legalizing recreational marijuana. It's what do you do to the lives of people who marijuana being illegal has affected as well.
Well, do you think the revenue... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Speaker, do you feel like sports betting is going to be taken up before the end of the legislative year?
I think at some point we will conference it, but I'm not sure. It depends on what the members want to do in conference. We haven't conference that we're going to be doing that probably shortly.
Speaker, back to recreational marijuana, do you want to see legislation that would expunge the criminal records of people arrested for possession or use of marijuana?
Me personally, yes, because if we're going to get to the point that it's going to be legal and recreational, then why should people now still be having trouble getting jobs and having a record for something that now could be legal? So I think it has to be a broader discussion of whether we just legalize it or not.
Do you think, Mr. Speaker, there's any way that broader discussion could occur within the next 4 weeks or so?
In Albany, it's a short time, but it's also, it's an eternity in politics. So we'll see.
Any thoughts on where that revenue, if there is recreational marijuana, where that revenue should go. There's been some discussion about reinvesting it into communities of color, places like that, in order to potentially kind of offset some of the impact that the war on drugs has made.
I think, you know, in the general fund, and then we could always decide where to do more spending. You can use that revenue. I don't want to get ahead of myself because I'm being negotiating myself or speak before I spoke to the conference, but, you know, we still have an opioid issue. You know, those revenues can help continue to fund prevention programs. That's just one idea. And so I don't know if I just want to say, well, the revenue from marijuana will pay for X. You can leave yourself options, but I do think that we should look at ways to spend that money in a productive way.
Okay, thank you.
Speaking on sports gambling, do you have any personal views as to whether that's a good idea to go forward with something that Senator Bonacek
built? This is my personal opinion.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of gambling, but again, it's legal here in the state, but the members will decide, but I'm not the biggest fan of gambling.
Okay, thanks.
Also this week, Democratic challenger to Andrew Cuomo, Cynthia Nixon, released a video highlighting claims of sexual harassment against officials in the governor's administration.
Governor, what about the hiring of Sam Hoyt? Was that a mistake, given his past when he was in the Assembly, had a relationship with an intern, and now he's got this lawsuit that he's facing?
No, I don't think so. I think what he did was wrong. I don't think it was a mistake to hire.
The Me Too movement, it is growing.
There will be a new normal because of these conversations.
What the Me Too movement has saying is that women are worthy of being believed.
He was banned from having interns in his office for sexually acting out with him.
Yeah, there's no doubt that he had a mistake. He had made a mistake, and he was past it, and he paid his price.
The video was released in response to a Facebook ad put out by the governor's campaign touting the administration's sexual harassment policy. We'll have more on this at the Reporters Roundtable. In other news, good government advocates returned to the Capitol this week for one more push to get lawmakers to enact ethics reform, including getting rid of JCOPE, the Joint Commission on Public Ethics.
I think what we know now, whatever anybody thought when they voted for that version of JCOPE, it's not working. So I think if you run around the halls and ask members, do you think JCOPE is working? Do you think we have the right system in place to go after violations of ethics and integrity and harassment and corruption? I think most of my colleagues might say, no, I don't really think we have that system down.
2018 has already seen corruption trials for former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver and former top Cuomo aide Joe Prococo. Both were found guilty. Still to come this year, the retrial of former Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos and a separate one involving the former head of the College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering, Elaine Calieros. Governor Cuomo was on Long Island Thursday, where the first installation of recycled materials from the old Tappan Zee Bridge will be put in along the coast. The goal of the new artificial reef is to improve the marine life and boost the local recreational industries.
Off the coast of Florida, they sunk a large ex-military surplus battleship. And it has driven an economy for several towns, people just coming to dive to see the battleship. We are going to do it on 12 sites. It is good for the environment. It creates habitat for the fisheries. The materials that are placed are all inspected and cleaned and surveyed before they are placed. And it's going to change, literally, the shoreline around Long Island.
Over 1,000 tons of material will be added to the Shinnecock Reef and located 2 nautical miles from the shore and up to 85 feet deep.
I'm from Cooperstown. My family's been living in Cooperstown for actually 8 generations.
Look, people keep telling me they don't recognize their country anymore. But this isn't about Trump. Trump is the result, not the cause. The cause is that for decades we've ignored the American worker and the economic pain and anxiety that they've been living with.
And finally, the 19th Congressional District, which includes parts of the Capital Region, Hudson Valley, and Southern Tier, is the home to one of the many interesting primary battles going on across the state. WAMC in Albany held a debate for the seven Democrats hoping to take on incumbent Republican John Faso in the fall. The congressional primary date here in New York is Tuesday, June 26th. All right, time now to send it on over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, who will moderate our Reporters' Roundtable.
All right, and now for analysis of the week's news. I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters' Roundtable by Dan Clark of PolitiFact New York and Dave Lombardo from my own paper, the Times Union. All right, we saw what is happening in the Senate. Could the chamber be headed for terminal gridlock through the 3 weeks or so remaining to us in the legislative session?
What an exciting week for the state Senate, which we can't say too often. A bill failed for the first time in I don't know how long. That never happens.
Yeah,
because as your viewers may know, they only bring bills to the floor that are definitely going to pass.
Right.
So we have 12 days of session left, and it'll be interesting to see whether Democrats keep this up every single day, or if they kind of give up and say, there's a little bit of pressure to do the people's business. We got to get something done.
Well, at this point, there's no real reason to expect the status quo to change of what we saw this week. There's, you know, the 31-31 tie at this point. Senate Democrats, you know, drew a line in the sand this week saying, we want votes on our bills. We believe that the chamber needs to operate in a more bipartisan fashion since no one has a clear majority. And, you know, unless Tom Croce comes sailing back to Albany, there's no reason to expect this dynamic to change. You know, whether Democrats feel get some pushback because they're going to be opposing bills that like, concussion bill dealing with schools, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they feel pressure to, start voting yes, remains to be seen, I guess.
Now, Dan used the phrase the people's business, which, as I alluded to at the top of the show, gives me flashbacks, brother, to the June 2009 state Senate coup, which, of course, back then it was a 62-seat chamber. The House was divided 31-31, and nobody could get anything done. With Croce out, that is very much the situation that remains here now. Back then, of course, the bills that got held up, in addition to kind of big stuff that lawmakers and the governor wanted to get done, they were the nitsy-bitsy extensions of lodging tax, local bill surcharges, right, that localities really count on. That is the stuff that ends up getting done in the last few weeks of session, and
yeah,
localities are going to start pressing Democrats, I would imagine, to get those done.
Yeah, there's some revenue that localities need from these extenders, and this happens at the end of every session. And I think we saw this last year, too, that they were held up over some deal. I don't remember what we were talking about last year, but Democrats also held up the home rule last year from Senate Republicans that really helps them with their base. And as far as Tom Croce goes, I was reading some reporting by John Campbell from US Today yesterday, and their office says, according to John, that they just don't know if Tom's going to be back or not.
Where in the world is Tom Croce?
We don't know where he is, and we don't know if he's going to be back. And I don't really know how that works with military service, whether he can just say, guys, I really got to go back to the state Senate, or whether he has to stay.
And, you know, Senate Republicans knew this was coming because, you know, first off, they haven't passed a bill in more than 2 weeks now. And when Croce was last here, they made sure to pass bullet aid, a little secret pork belly spending that goes out to their districts. And that was pretty much the last thing they did when Croce was here because they knew they had the votes for it. You know, heading forward, I don't know if they will, but I have to imagine that Democrats and Republicans are going to make some sort of concessions to each other. We already saw, like, the Reproductive Health Act, which is one of the things that Democrats want to vote on, actually got a vote this week in committee where it failed. And if I'm Senate Republicans, I think I would point out, okay, we have a process and your bill got a vote. It got a vote in committee, it failed.
Now, clearly, the governor is empowering this, at least if you want to base the appearance of, or if you want to look at the appearance of Kathy Hochul as a player in this conflict.
Yeah, and I didn't know that this was even a thing, that she could do this, where, and I guess, according to reporting that I saw, she can't actually vote for a bill, I think. She can't be the tiebreaker for a bill. She can tiebreak a procedural vote.
Correct.
So in that process, I guess it aids the Democrats, but it kind of becomes a little bit thorny when they actually want to vote on a bill, because if a member's absent, you know, these numbers are so close with the 31-31. Everybody really has to be there and on their game. I think when we saw this week, Velmenant Montgomery,
right,
wasn't there for a vote.
Exactly.
And it's like, if you're going to do this, Democrats, you really all have to be in this to win it.
Right.
It lends credence to the idea that this is just about politics, too, because
yeah,
the Democrats know that they don't have 32 votes, and their assumption is, okay, theoretically, we need to pass this. We need Republicans to vote for our stuff, which makes it seem like, okay, maybe it's not really about passing it. Maybe it's about getting Republicans to take hard votes. Maybe it's trying to get marginal Republicans to vote no on things that they think will be a problem in November. If I'm the Republicans, I'm going to bring up more bills that they might be tough for Democrats to vote no on.
Right. What they want is video of Republicans voting on the floor of the chamber against, they as they would
Even
say it, a woman's
illegal
right to
use. To use in right. campaign.
I will say with the CCCA, the Contraceptive
Which
Coverage
is a
Act,
bill.
It's a Bonasic bill. He's a Republican, so they technically would have 32 votes if all the Democrats were there. So I guess there was some hope with that. But
the amendment puts together the two bills. So. Oh. He can vote no that way.
We should move on. There was news today, the firing of Jay Kayanaga, who is the number two at, or was the number two at the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities. He had been a higher up in a number of state agencies, including the Justice Center, the Budget Division, and the Department of Criminal Justice Services. He was fired, I think, largely in the wake of reporting from our Brendan 100%. Lyons. That noted he had been the subject of numerous complaints and was recently written about in an IG report that found reprehensible and indefensible behavior comments towards women at a number of the agencies that he had worked for. But he appears to have been protected. If he received sanction, they were mild and was moved from agency to agency.
And I want to just reiterate one thing you mentioned there, that this all stems from reporting by Brendan Lyons at the Times Union. This was not on anybody's radar until he made it an issue. He talked to people and brought to light the hostile workplace that this guy created through multiple agencies, like you highlighted, and the fact that people were holding investigations that went nowhere, investigations that were put into a file cabinet and forgotten about. And now all of a sudden, after multiple reporting, finally we're seeing some action on this. When Cynthia Nixon gets into the race for governor, now we're seeing the governor's people take some serious actions on this. And the other issue now we're seeing is sexual harassment action. This was tucked into the budget. Well, and not tucked in, it was a big deal in the budget. And we've had reporting now about the governor touting sexual harassment policies and making this a campaign issue.
Putting a check mark on it.
Right. And our Rachel Silverstein at the Times Union has highlighted, well, maybe hold off on that check mark for now because these regulations, which may be great, haven't actually been written yet.
Dan, we also want to note the passing of Denny Farrell, Assemblyman, a big wheel, who was regarded by all for his comedy and his skill on the floor.
He was, a powerhouse in the state assembly. We saw, I think, Helene Weinstein replaced him this year. So he was there as early as last year in the assembly. He was the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, which is the all-powerful committee that really decides and goes through all of those hearings, hours and hours and hours of hearings, of budget hearings. And they filter through everything, and they help create the budget for the assembly. So it was really his job to create the budget with the speaker, and he was great.
All right, well, that's where we're going to have to leave it. So thanks very much to Dan Clark, currently of PolitiFact New York, but you have some news?
I'll be going to the New York Law Journal in a few weeks. I'm very excited to start my new adventure.
A good hire by them. And, of course, Dave Lombardo from the Times Union. Thanks very much for coming in. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk.
All right, thanks, Casey. This week, we want to know if you would like to see the legalization of sports betting. Let us know by logging on to our website, nynow.org. Last week, we asked which political race you were most interested in, and 61% said the battle for governor, 13% for attorney general, and 26% said their local congressional district. Herb and Slingerlands voted in the majority, saying Governor Cuomo had a well-orchestrated convention. Now he has to win over the rank and file. Jonathan in Valley Falls is looking at the AG race, hoping Preet Bharara is running. He would be an outstanding AG. Cuomo would always be looking over his shoulder. And finally, Marilyn on Long Island, watching on WLIW, told us she's most interested in her congressional race, saying Lee Zeldin is a Trump puppet who needs to be replaced. Thanks for voting, and to do so this week, just head to nynow.org. It's where you can find hundreds of our past programs and follow links to us on social media. We also have a link to the Capitol Confidential website. You can also access it by going to timesunion.com. All right, Casey, we saw the seven Democrats looking to take on John Faso in November, but there are a bunch of interesting primary races going around the state.
Right, we've got about 3 weeks to go, and I think some of the most exciting ones this week, there was news down on Staten Island where former Congressman Michael Grimm, who of course did prison time for some financial difficulties, is running against the incumbent Dan Donovan. Mm-hmm. This week, President Trump, who Michael Grimm has been casting himself very much in the mold yes. of, endorsed Donovan, saying that he was the best one to move his agenda ahead. Incorrectly said, however, that Dan Donovan voted for the tax bill. He did not for the tax reform bill. Up in the North Country, you've got five, count them, five Democrats who are vying for the chance to take on Elise Stefanik, who, of course, has a very hot hand among the national GOP. And one of the more exciting races on the Democratic side as well is out in the 24th District, where Democrats are hoping to take down Representative John Katko in the Syracuse area. You've got Juanita Perez-Williams, who is who has the backing of the DCCC, the National Democratic Organization, running against Dana Balter, who is the favorite of a lot of county leaders and also has a large activist army, as reported in the New York Times.
And to the west of Syracuse, you have in Rochester, former, well, not former, he's still the Assembly Majority Leader, the number two in the Assembly, Joe Morelli. He's being challenged by a longtime journalist out there, Rachel Barnhart.
Right, another institutional versus versus maverick
exactly
race.
Exactly right.
All right, well, that's all the time we have today. We end the program with shots from beautiful Thatcher Park in Albany County. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.